Experience a trip through the South Dakota Oral History Center, learn about the history of the Civilian Conservation Corps in South Dakota, and visit Yankton for a reenactment of the return of the Lewis and Clark Expedition's White Pirogue in 1806. It's as simple as tuning in for an all-new Dakota Life tonight at 8 p.m. Central, 7 Mountain on SDPB-TV. Joining us now from SDPB's Vermilion Studios, Dakota Life producer Melissa Hammersmith-Severs. Hey, Melissa, thanks for coming by.
Hello.
This is such a labor of love, and I just love to see everything that you're sort of coming up with as the new episodes roll out. So first of all, I'm so glad that that this is your thing now, and we're all benefiting from the storytelling that's coming out of the SDPB team.
Well, I've had a lot of fun, too, so I'm honored as well.
All right, let's talk about the December episode of Dakota Life. What do we have in store? Where do you want to begin?
Well, we're going to celebrate heritage, and when you think about visiting history in South Dakota, I think a lot of people think about museums, which we have a lot of wonderful destinations for museums in South Dakota, but we're going to, well, actually we will visit how one museum got started with the Civilian Conservation Corps. Brian Gevick had a chance to visit with somebody who was a member in his youth, and so it's kind of, well, it's really wonderful to be able to get a firsthand perspective of history like that.
I didn't know much about the Civilian Conservation Corps, and Brian has told a little bit of that story on this program, but tell listeners what exactly that was and what those folks were doing here in South Dakota.
Well, it was essentially one of the first opportunities for the federal government to have, you know, shovel-ready programs, and it was a way to get thousands of men to work in a time when there wasn't a lot of work in the country. And so in South Dakota, specifically in the Black Hills in this particular case, a lot of the destinations that we enjoy in the Black Hills right now were the result of projects with the Civilian Conservation Corps, like work around Sheridan Lake and Sylvan Lake and some of the lodges at Custer State Park. So and we have them to thank.
One of my favorite parts of that story is really with all these young men in camps and doing the work, they also played baseball and took classes and learned how to do things. So the sense of really how life keeps happening in the midst of something historic is fascinating. Brian always does a great job of bringing those stories.
Yeah, we're really lucky to have, we have several people that are really enthusiastic about history, and Brian's done a lot of great work exploring the stories behind some of these projects and happenings in the state. And I really enjoyed learning about this. You know, it helped immediately improve South Dakota, but then it was also a way for the young men involved to improve themselves so that when their time was done with the Corps, then they could use those skills and go on.
Tell us a little bit about the South Dakota Oral History Center, because this is something that I can't believe I didn't know existed.
Well, yes, it's kind of a hidden gem, and it's on the campus of USD, and it's a wonderful archive of audio files, again, firsthand accounts of people that have lived through different time periods in history, or they're sharing accounts that they heard from, you know, their parents and grandparents. For example, Gladys Pyle shares how her family came to South Dakota. And there's accounts from soldiers that were with the 7th Cavalry at Wounded Knee, and it's all pretty amazing resources that are available, and really a way to kind of connect with the past in a way that you couldn't do by reading it in a book.
So what do you know about how these are collected or stored? You know, when we hear the story, I just think so much about what we do on radio and how all these voices, are you know, being invited to the program, these people are being invited to the program to share their story. How does the Oral History Center work? Do you know?
From Bob Bussey's account, it's staffed, you know, primarily by Dr. Samuel Hurley, and he's kind of the gatekeeper for all the archives. And I believe that they're working on digitizing the files so that perhaps they would be more accessible.
We'll have to take a little field trip and listen to some of those voices. Who else is sort of archived in the Oral History Center? Some other well-known folks?
Well, there was a gentleman that was a Pearl Harbor survivor by the name of John Smith. So he was able to share what it was like to be, you know, in the midst of that attack and come away from it. And so that's always amazing to hear a person share those experiences. And Sam Hurley, Dr. Hurley, shared that he looks at the project as being the closest thing to a time machine that a person could have access to. And it's wonderful to be able to very nearly have a conversation with somebody from the past. But
yeah. All right, so let's talk Lewis and Clark and tell us about the boat.
Well, pardon me. So Butch Beauvair made this trip down the river in 2001. He is he's a boat builder and a historian. And so they made this trip 17 years ago and shared the story of Lewis and Clark with youth down the way. And then Shirley Enos had joined this historical group near Onawa, Iowa, and reflected, you know, that she wishes that she could have joined them and how wonderful that they had all these adventures. But she was working on raising a family at that time, and she really felt like she, you know, missed the proverbial boat there. And Butch, you know, ever the adventurer at heart, you know, thought, well, you know, there's a lot of effort that goes into a project of this nature that maybe he didn't quite have the energy for, like organizing all the stops and raising money. But if she could do that, then he supposed he could maybe put together another boat. And much to his surprise and pleasure, I think, she managed to put the pieces to the puzzle together. And so then they got to have a second expedition, and they rallied the troops and gathered in Fort Randall to launch the White Pearl II and traveled downriver. But it maybe didn't go quite as planned, but they had quite the adventure as well.
That's probably good, you know, the best laid plans, right?
Right.
What do you love about working in Dakota life? I mean, now that you've been doing it for a while, in the leadership role there, hearing from listeners, getting the feedback, hearing staff sort of bring up these ideas of a story that you've just got to hear about for Dakota life. Tell me a little bit about that process for you, Melissa.
Well, I always enjoy visiting with, and I think I've mentioned this before, but it always bears repeating. Everybody in South Dakota is passionate about different things. And even though I may not be the most educated historian ever, I can appreciate when somebody gets excited about a story. Yeah. And so when I was visiting with the folks involved with the White Pearl, they were really excited. You know, they got to imagine that they are on a boat, you know, 200 years ago, nearly 200 years ago, navigating some of the most untouched waters of the Missouri. You know, like the section between Yankton and Ponca is the river in the most natural state. And they were excited to do that. And when the river said that they couldn't, then they were really disappointed, but they still got to connect with, you know, thousands of school-aged children and share the story. And so for that, they were really excited. And that makes me excited, too. Yeah.